7.7.
Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
Good morning and welcome to our morning show. Joining us today is our good friend Lauren Glassbrenner, who's the district administrator for the River Valley School District. How are you doing today, Lauren?
I'm doing great. It was fun. On my drive over, I was listening to a little bit of jambalaya and crawfish pie, and I was snapping some fingers to old Hank Williams. So I love that. A good old country, classic country song kind of keeps you moving in the morning. So I appreciate that very much. It's a beautiful fall morning. So.
It is. I know you were a little disgruntled, though, because you guessed it was Mary Chapin Carpenter.
Yeah, there's a song by Mary Chapin Carpenter from the 80s that speaks to, I think, Beaujolais, which is the culinary piece that you were talking about, and it's about Twist and Shout, down at the Twist and Shout by Mary Carpenter, which is, I think, a Louisiana song about going to a dance down in Louisiana.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, different. We don't know.
You got a legitimate gripe there. That's pretty close.
It's all good. It's all research, so it's good. It's good to have fun with that.
Yes, it is. We had a lot of fun at the River Valley School Fair. Was it a success in your eyes?
The River Valley School Fair is just that annual event that makes you so proud to be a part of southwestern Wisconsin. And I say it every time I'm here. I have the best job in the world. And I get to be a part of the school fair. And it's one of the great things that allows River Valley to really celebrate community. School fair was incredible. We had a record number of animals entered. We had a record number of other entries, whether it was crafts or whether it's vegetables, whether it was all that other stuff. We also had incredible agricultural educational experiences. So we have 8 different stations for children and family members to go to. I actually had some older folks from the community come up to me and say, "Those were great. I learned more about soil today than I'd ever known about soil before." And they do that through like chocolate pudding and a dirt cup. So, I mean, they're making ag into something achievable, attainable, really easy to learn about. And so with the ag experiences, with all the entries, it was just an incredible day for a school fair. We had perfect weather.
Yes.
We had incredible participation. We had an incredible homecoming event. So all week long, we're celebrating homecoming in the River Valley School District. Thursday night, we had an incredible pep rally after our volleyball match. And then Friday, we go into the big football game after a parade. The parade had a record number of entries. Just an incredible day, an incredible week, really, for River Valley. And I'm just so proud to be a part of it. Again, it takes a million hands to get all of that to happen. And so a continued shout out to some of the people behind the scenes. Last week on Thursday, the River Valley School Board recognized the efforts of the school fair secretaries and their 2 FFA alumni, Tiffany Neuheisel, as well as Rachel Eberly, are 2 young women that kind of take in every entry. Well, first, they plan out an entire fair school fair booklet. Just like a county fair, there's a school fair booklet about how to do the entries, how to get registered, how to follow the rules. They do that in coordination with Sherry Graffunder of FFA, an ag educator. And then from there, those 2 are the behind the scenes to get everything up and moving, whether it's a ribbon, whether it's a judge, whether it's a finding, making sure that the pig weighing is happening at the right time with the right people, with the right vet certifications. All of those behind the scenes people are incredible. And so our FFA alumni, huge shout out to them, to our parents that are involved, a huge shout out to them. Just the entire thing was smooth. It just rolled on by without a hitch. And it's because of all the hands that are behind the scenes. So a shout out to those young ladies, but also a shout out to everybody that was a part of just being our crowd. People come from out of the woodwork to be a part of the school fair. And I appreciate you guys coming over, you and Henry coming over too, and doing interviews on site. It adds to the tone. It adds to the excitement. And so we're just excited to continue the tradition of the school fair.
We really enjoyed ourselves, and a lot of students who are very articulate on the radio. I was just really impressed by those. And a lot of them are chosen by Mrs. Grofunder, but they all spoke very well, I think.
Yeah. Our egg department is outstanding, but our FFA team, leadership team, which is usually made up of sophomores, juniors, and seniors, mainly upperclassmen from the high school, are a really articulate group. We've got some incredible speakers, but they're also just great kids. And I think the great thing about high school is you get to develop some of those interests into some job sets, you know. So when I think about the kid that's out there talking about agriculture, if I was a local employer, I'd be thinking about how I can get that kid back into my business in the next few years as soon as they get out of postgraduate stuff from River Valley. We've got some talented kids, and we don't want them to scurry off to Iowa and Nebraska. We want them to stick around. So, yeah, I think we've got some great kids doing some great things. And, yeah, they're really articulate, and they know what they're talking about because they've been involved in that stuff for the entire school year. Summer, they come together as a leadership team, and they start talking about school fair and what the FFA goals are going to be for this school year. So the 24-25 FFA leadership team of those kids is just a great group of kids. And we're excited to have them for some of them, their final year of activities at River Valley.
Did you go out and throw a cow chip? Did you or not?
I did not. No. So we had a new event that was run by Grady, I believe. And Grady's a great kid too. He's a junior, I believe. And Grady wanted to try out a new activity for kids, which was a cow chip throwing contest. I did not get back to the cow chip throwers, but I did see him doing it. And it's a fundraiser in that sense too, where, you know, kids are excited about the opportunity. I saw that, I believe there were age categories, so the littlest cow chip thrower had a trophy, as well all the way up to the senior cow chip thrower. So it's kind of fun to see that stuff. Obviously dried cow chips, and obviously they're trying to wear protective hand coverings if they need them. So it's all there, and it's fun. So it's a great tradition. I love that they try to put new things into it, like cow chip throwing, and keep the traditional things that have been there for the last 61 years, like a meat auction, so that kids can raise a great project and then sell it off to a community member. And so it takes the entire community to kind of come out, participate, sponsor, and be a part of the great event. And again, hats off to everybody that did it. We just were very, very lucky. It takes an entire school district to take the initiative to do this. I have in front of me 3 pages of tasks that the staff at River Valley has to kind of jump into as well. There's like face painting. Well, teachers in the elementary or high school get to be a part of that. So the teachers come over and they use their talents to paint some faces. We've got teachers that are helping us be a part of handing out ribbons. Teachers are there to make sure on Wednesday and Thursday night, you know, a jar of pickles comes in and it's registered correctly, and then making sure that it gets to the right table. So that starts on Wednesday night for a Friday fair. So staff, parents, volunteers are all hands on deck. So we're excited that it was an incredible year. And now we're thinking about what's year 62 for the River Valley School Fair look like. So we're always excited to think forward.
Another person inducted into the Ted Lins Hall of Honor. That was a very, very nice ceremony there.
There was. So the Ted Lins Hall of Honor, which is an annual celebration that we have in River Valley too, in honor of Ted Lins. It always goes out to an alumni or somebody that's gone above and beyond within the River Valley School District. The person that was recognized this year was Carla Carmody. She's an athlete from years ago, right? You know, Carla's my age. So, you know, we were athletes back in the day. I didn't go here, but she did. And so she's an alumni, but she's also a staff member. Carla Carmody is one of our tech ed teachers at River Valley High School. She's an incredible community member. She's an incredible staff member. And she just kind of emits this great energy. She's just a great person. And she shares that good energy with her kids every day in the classroom, as well as she did in high school. So she was a part of River Valley High School. I think she went away for a little bit. Her early career in teaching was not in River Valley and then came back to River Valley. So it's pretty rare to have somebody that kind of, again, emits that great energy, that great almost patriotism for the district, if you will, and then brings it back to the Valley and continues to put in years to show service and dedication based on her alma mater. So a great recognition of Carla. Ms. Carmody is well-respected by many people everybody that meets her just loves her. So she's a great, great person to have on staff. And again, a huge shout out and congratulations. That goes out to Carla Carmody.
Revenue limits. Today's a big day for districts around the state, isn't it?
It is a big day. So at 11 o'clock today in the state of Wisconsin, the Department of Public Instruction will release revenue limits. And what revenue limits are basically is kind of the amount that a district gets to use within their budget. I'll keep it at very high level kind of stuff because it's a really complex process to figure out the entire school budget. But basically, it's an estimate that you set in the summer. And until today, you're working on estimates, right? You're working on estimates in the school year. Starting today, Mr. Cry, our business manager, will be able to take that revenue, and he is then allowed to figure out what the mill rate or the tax rate will be on equalized property values in the district. So we all can go back and look at the basic kind of ideas here on school funding, but it's a lot based on the property value of all properties within the district, whether it's a business within Lone Rock or a farm that's way out in Bear Valley. So all of that gets kind of a property value thrown to it to make sure that it matches. Then that overall equalized property value in a district is going up or down, right? That's what we have to look at all times. It's higher in some spots and lower in others. So I know for right now, out of my municipalities within River Valley, I've got everything from Black Earth, Arena, Clyde, Ridgeway, Wyoming, etc. We try to keep in our district some of that really aware. I guess I would say there's a lot in school funding that the schools are not responsible for. And I will say that your equalized value within your home or your property is set by your municipality, not by your school district. And a lot of people think if their taxes go up, it's the school's fault. And that's not true. That's not always true, I should say. If there's great things happening in your district and you support that, it might require you to have your district dollars go up. But truly, it's a lot based on the equalized value of your property or home. And I guess I would say that fluctuates in bigger districts. So you've heard me talk about River Valley being a great big landmass that we are. And there's certain municipalities that are going up and certain municipalities that are actually going down. So if I look at the Village of Spring Green, their 2024 percentage change will actually maybe, if everything kind of pans out based on our estimations, go down. But if you live out in Buena Vista, which I do, by the way,
me too,
up in Bear Valley, yep, our 2024 percent change will go up by 18.15%. Mm-hmm. So people will say, well, how did my taxes go up? I think we need to get better at going back to our municipalities and making sure we're aware of what's going on there with property values that then gets translated into a school district budget and how we try to set that. So once that value comes out at 11 o'clock today, we have numbers. Those numbers we try to bring in. And now the district, we're trying to figure out what's going up and what's going down. Based on what's happened in our municipalities, it looks as if the average equalized value of our properties, Phil, your home and my home, will go up by 7.6%. Okay, so you heard me say that ours is going up by 18, some are only going up by 1, and so somewhere in the middle is where the equalized average property value will be. That's what the district gets to play with. So within that, depending on where the final state revenue limit comes in today at 11 o'clock, we hope to decrease in River Valley our mill rate so that we can continue not to have a huge increase. All in all, a lot of numbers, a lot of my mouth talking really equals the idea that even though your value goes up, we're trying to keep our mill rate down so that your average tax dollar doesn't go way up. We're really trying to spend carefully in the valley to make sure that we're not asking for more than we need. And it's really about that idea of tax levies and equalized values to truly not make it hurt when it comes to the tax bill. And if your tax bill does go up, I guess I would say take a look at where it's going up. Really research what's happening on that tax bill because it's not always your district, mm-hmm. right? It's sometimes your municipality or somebody that's assigned your property a new value. And because it now is worth more, they tax you more. So there's a lot in there. It's a lot to understand, but I guess I would say within that, just dig in. And if you have any questions, always feel free to call your district offices. I think it's really important that we think about how to fund schools. I've been out here before and we talk through how schools are funded. I know I heard a radio ad just as I was driving over also for Ithaca. Ithaca's got a school referendum. And it takes money to run a school district. And so for littler districts like in Ithaca, they are highlighting things appropriately. They do have an incredible FFA program. They do have incredible youth apprenticeships. They do have an incredible school climate out there based on small, intimate, great things that are happening. But ultimately, the residents of the Ithaca School District have to figure out what the vision of that is. Just like River Valley, just like Riverdale, just like Richland School District, we all have to be involved in those big conversations so that we know what we want for the children of tomorrow.
Indeed, and not to bring up the R word, but certainly as you look down the road, you know, possibly going to a referendum, this could have an impact on how people feel about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so part of that radio spot for the Ithaca School District that I was listening to, it said, I can't remember the gentleman's name, doesn't matter, but he was basically saying, you know, if this doesn't pass, we have to think about whether or not our doors will stay open. That is really the impetus, I guess, or the big question that we have out there for a lot of small communities. And I would say this isn't just southwestern Wisconsin. This is across the state of Wisconsin. Based on how we fund our schools, we are going to have some deep and heavy conversations about how big you want your districts to be or whether or not you want to keep your doors open. Things have changed. We all know that. And things have been greatly moving forward, but we also have to think about how much that costs. And with an inflation going up, so does everything. So the cost of transportation, just gasoline alone for a bus, costs way more money than it used to. So all of that digs in for school districts. The number of schools in the state of Wisconsin that have had to go to operational referenda has never been seen like it is right now. It'll be interesting in the November election to see those results. So that's something I'll speak to in November, Phil, when I come back. There's so many districts going to operational referenda just to pay for the bills, right? Mm-hmm. To pay for the electric, to pay for transportation, to pay for the gas, to pay for the books and the curriculum. All of those things cost money. And if the state has said to us, you're only getting this amount and that amount is less than inflation, then we've got to come back out to our voters and say, okay, we don't have the money coming from the state. We need additional dollars. That's what the operational referendum process is for. And so then we get to ask for those monies to come back and fund your schools. And that's exactly what Ithaca is doing, is trying to get those additional dollars in so that they can continue the work that they're currently doing. It's not to improve, it's to keep the current programming moving forward.
Mm-hmm. To stay the same.
Yeah.
There's so many things, Lauren, that aren't in your control, too. And I don't want to belittle anything, obviously. Special education comes into play, much needed. But
yes,
those are things that maybe weren't needed a few years ago as much as they are now in terms of the programs.
It could be. And there's a lot of federal laws that come out for things like special education that require a district to pay 100%, right? We have to pay 100% for whatever the cost would be. So let's say it's a special program within special education, and you can think of that, you know, blueberry pie. There's going to be 100% of the blueberry pie there. The state requires that. It's federal mandated. It comes back down through the state. Those dollars come in. It's going to cost a certain amount, and the state has said it should be fully funded. Okay, it's got to be fully funded. So then you would think as a district that the dollars coming from the federal and the state would make up that amount. Nope, they don't. Currently in the state of Wisconsin, it's about 30% of what's coming in. So it's mandated, but they're giving us 30% of that. So 70% of that pie has got to come from somewhere else. And often what happens is then you go to your general budget to cover those federal costs. So yes, special education is a good example of where there's a huge push right now to get the state to just come up to 60%. Double your dollars, state. You've got money that you've been saving. You've got money that kind of is in a rainy day fund. And we all know that the state of Wisconsin has billions of dollars out there in their funds. School districts are saying, give us some of that to just meet what you mandate up to 60%, not 100%. How about we get to 60%? If that would happen in most school districts, you would see millions of dollars additionally that we wouldn't have to transfer out of general fund into special ed funding. So it would help our general budgets by millions of dollars in almost every school district in the state of Wisconsin based on the numbers of kids. So it's, again, like I said before, incredibly complex, but we want the state to recognize we're all in these really hard times and we're going to need some help. And so districts jump in and say things like, we need an operational referendum to keep the doors open. And it's happened to all the districts around us right now as we sit here, Phil. So it's something that I think everybody in the communities needs to really take a really close look at and really think about talking to your legislators to say, hey, what's he talking about? What do you mean there's all these things that are mandated, but you're not giving them full funding for? Yep, it's mandated. We've got to pay for it. Now give us some funding to meet it. So that's really what the political side of the budget hits, for sure.
You are in a larger school district. I believe Columbus is bigger than River Valley. That's where you were at before. But what are the challenges? Are they unique to their district and larger districts going through kind of the same things?
Yeah, the state gives us a compensation, like I keep talking about. I think it's 30.9% that we get for special ed funding. That's the same in Columbus or in Sun Prairie or in Middleton or in River Valley or in Ithaca or in Richland, wherever we are. We're getting that same percentage. But the difference is their general amount of taxes that they can levy based on the number of students. If your student population is going up, you're getting more money. Ithaca's numbers aren't going up. Richland's aren't going up. River Valley's numbers aren't going up. So we keep getting less money. And I think that's where it hits more. Where we see, again, in the state of Wisconsin, a lot of growth, it's happening in suburbia, right? So it's happening in places like Sun Prairie's got great growth. Wanakee continues to see growth. Verona keeps having growth. Middleton Cross Plains is growing. Madison is not. Right? Wisconsin Heights a little bit. I sat by a gentleman who's the superintendent in La Crosse. La Crosse, the city of La Crosse, a great big college town. You think of it as this, you know, just bustling place of activity, has decreasing enrollment. La Crosse proper, the city of La Crosse is getting smaller. The city of Green Bay's public school district getting smaller. I think last year I saw an article where there are 11 schools in Green Bay were going to have to be closed because they don't have the number of kids in the city. So that urban feel is out. The suburban is growing. The rural is getting smaller. So we just see this kind of migration of people going across the state of Wisconsin, and the funding follows the kid. And if you don't have more kids or more businesses coming into your area, you're just not going to get as much money as you once had.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring up La Crosse, too, because there's been talk about consolidating high schools. But Holman and Onalaska, places like that, are seeing a huge growth, aren't
they? Yeah, so those suburban schools grow, and then your city proper schools, it's almost, it's like squeezing, and the number of kids are not going up. In the state of Wisconsin, in general, people aren't having the same amount of children. So where they're used to be five kids, even in a family in La Crosse, let's say they had four children, you're down to one or two children. So it's almost within a short amount of time, your school district is getting half the size, but the buildings are still all there. So what do you do with those buildings? You know, in River Valley, we had four elementaries, right? We had these, we had an elementary in Arena, we had one in Lone Rock, we had one in Plain, and we had one in Spring Green. We were forced to make some really hard decisions based on enrollment to bring everybody to a centralized location. Again, that was Spring Green just by location. It wasn't based on Spring Green's the best. It was based on location alone because it's in the center of our location. Richland School District has had to consolidate further. It's really something to behold in the state of Wisconsin as you take a look at any district from like the 1960s, 70s when I was born and you were born, all the way up until we have now. The last 50 years in education has changed demographics rapidly. And so now we have old buildings, fewer kids, and what are we going to do? And that's really what's happened to a lot of districts. If you didn't build in the magical 90s or even in the early 2000s, now it's kind of become crunch time in the land of school budgeting. And so a lot of us in leadership positions have really had to dig deep to figure out how we balance all the budgets within our walls of our schools.
Interesting stuff. We'll come back with more in a moment. Lauren Glassbrenner, District Administrator of River Valley Schools, in with us today. We continue our conversation on the morning show with Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley Schools. I know there's a big effort in the River Valley community, the Liturgy Fest. That is going on right now, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's a great group of retirees and young people that are working together to really kind of push on ideas of literacy in the Spring Green area. And I always love to find those community connections. The school fair is one great example of a community connection where the community is alive and we all get to celebrate something fun. So in the month of October, we have a group called the Spring Green Literary Fest. And they put on, throughout the month of October, all sorts of really fun activities where people are centralized around a common theme, a common book, a common read. And some of the things that have been happening are just really cool for people to be involved with. Last night, we had an author event. It was sponsored by Arcadia Books, independent bookstore over in Spring Green. But the author was Brian Reisinger, who is a River Valley graduate. You said you had him on the radio.
We did.
And his book is called Land Rich, Cash Poor. So we think about land rich, cash poor, and we think about schools, and we think about the vast amount of property that a lot of farmers have. They are land rich. They have a ton of land. Much of it now is being used for crops, but cash poor. They've invested so much time in equipment, in seed, in money, that the actual money that's sitting in their accounts or in their checkbook isn't there. It's all invested. I was talking to my dad last night, and they're pulling the corn off the crops over in Crawford County, where our home farm is. And the mill, I guess I'd call it, down in Boscobel is full. The corn coming off, there's so much abundance of it right now, and everybody's trying to get it out of the fields. But do we have a need for it? Is there truly the need for the amount of corn that's being produced in southwestern Wisconsin right now? And it gets into subsidies, and it gets into a lot of politics around agriculture that I'm not great at. But what it does is it really makes us think carefully about planning and how the land provides for us as communities, and whether or not we're doing the best for the land, for our communities, which includes agriculture, a tremendous amount of agriculture. So that book. What'd you think of Brian? How did the interview go?
It went really well. And of course, you know me, I like to reminisce a little bit. Talked about his family farm and, yeah, you know, how it's still in existence in the River Valley District and, yeah, and whatnot. And, you know, moving forward and, you know, ways we can, you know, maybe keep that going. So,
yeah, I've spoken before about a Jerry Apps book that speaks to what are small farmers going to do? And sometimes we see some openings of opportunity, whether it's through finding your niche, as they say, whether it's through vegetables or through flowers or through one crop. You see, like, I think the cranberry harvest is happening in Wisconsin. We've seen centralized in central Wisconsin, cranberries being something that we have as a state a great abundance of, and we get to be the major producer of. Wild rice, that's another thing that you get to see. I think the diversity of what we have in our farms right now is really interesting to me. It's something that I like to study a little bit, because as a kid, you know, I like to be a little nostalgic too, but I can think of sitting on the back of an oat seed planter and picking up rocks. And how many farmers are planting oats now? How many farmers are planting wheat? How many farmers are really having a diversity? And how many have just strictly gone to monocultures in corn or soybeans? So I know it's about profits and paying the bills. I get that too. But it is a big conversation out there in the world of agriculture. And it's just, again, those last 50 years, look at the changes that have happened in ag. And I think that translates into your communities, one of which is your school district. So I think that definitely reflects. So again, Brian Reisinger, he's been a great author for us. And that was a great event last night. Coming up, we have another event coming up. For kids, it's really for teenagers and high schoolers, around a book called The Diary of a Young Naturalist. We have a lot of young people that are taking a great interest in the future of our environments, the future of our ecosystem. So that's another one, Diary of a Young Naturalist. There's an art exhibit out at the Wyoming Valley School between Spring Green and Dodgeville. We have a beautiful Frank Lloyd Wright structure out there called the Wyoming Valley School. And there's a cultural art exhibit about prairies, the tall grass prairie ecosystem. And so you can go out there, and it's a free exhibit where you can be there. It's on the weekend, so it'd be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 3. Great art exhibit out there called Driftless Prairie Visions with five local artists. And so that's exciting to be there. We have a poetry reading coming up, and that'll be run by some actors by APT. We're going to have Tracy Michelle Arnold and David Daniel. They'll be reading an evening of poetry. The poetry will be by author Wendell Berry. That's coming up. We have a book discussion for a whole community read on the book called Pastoral Song. That's a great book by James Rebanks. So again, education is more than just what's happening in your schools. Education is about how your entire community embraces learning. And things like LitFest, as I like to call it, are about adult education sometimes. It's about making sure that your entire community continues to grow and learn and read and focus in on great conversations about our community. And again, this year, the whole community read is on a centralized theme of nature and how we use nature. On 26th of October, we're going to have a community-wide potluck. So that we'll have organic produce and slow created foods, I think, or local foods creating into a potluck. And then it finishes up with one final kind of lit fest excitement over there. So if you're interested in any of this stuff, it would be springgreenliteraryfest.org. Again, springgreenliteraryfest.org. And it's got great events that are centralized around great books that take us into a conversation about community and how we're using the land. And I think it's been really fun to be a part of.
Appreciate you coming in here as always.
Thank you.
Lauren Glassbrenner, he'll be back next month, District Administrator for the River Valley School District. More coming up in the morning show about community events.
From cute pumpkins to cozy throw blankets, festive table settings, and charming wall art, you'll find everything you need to get into the spooky spirit at a great price. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 9 to noon. Come visit us. We can't wait to see you.
Attention farmers and folks in need of quality supplies. Engine Creek Farm Store has got you covered. Located at 11678 Yuba Drive, Hillsboro, Wisconsin, Engine Creek Farm Store is your local oasis for all things farm and machinery supplies. From essential tools to supplies that keep your farm running smoothly, they've got it all. And guess what? Engine Creek Farm Store goes beyond the farm. You can also pick up some rugged clothes and boots for those hardworking days. Give them a call at 608-528-4001.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
Good morning. Our news update this time is sponsored by Bailey Paint and Decorating, your full-line Benjamin Moore dealer with quality paint and expert advice. And by Chet's Feed, Seed and Such, the friendly feed store. Today's forecast calls for a high of 58 with sunshine. Right now in Richland Center, we are at our overnight low, 21 degrees.
Bailey Paint and Decorating reminds you that the perfect color should be enjoyed for years to come. Extraordinarily durable Benjamin Moore paint and exterior stain ensure exactly that. Bailey Paint and Benjamin Moore know that getting the right product is the secret of success. Bailey Paint and Decorating ensures you have the right color and products and offers the best paint you can buy in Benjamin Moore paint products. Bailey Paint and Decorating, Court Street, Downtown Richland Center, your Benjamin Moore headquarters.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee. At least six Wisconsin farms are giving away thousands of chickens after an Iowa-based processor abruptly closed last week. Wisconsin Agriculture Secretary Randy Romanski says the situation involving Pure Prairie Poultry is unfortunate. Romanski says it's been challenging to find out how many Wisconsin farmers have been impacted. The state ag department lacks authority to take possession of the birds or to feed them, so as folks focused on being a resource to farmers, some of whom have taken to social media to offer their chickens. Farmers who need assistance can contact the Wisconsin Farm Center at 800-942-2474. Barack Obama will be in Madison next week. The former two-term Democratic president will be here on Tuesday, joined by Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Their joint appearance is timed to coincide with the first day of in-person absentee voting in Wisconsin, just 2 weeks out from Election Day. The Harris-Walz ticket is counting on strong Democratic turnout in Madison and Dane County, as well as in Milwaukee, where the vice president has a campaign event scheduled for this Thursday. U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde has campaign events in Milwaukee County and Madison today. The Hovde campaign says the Republican challenger to Senator Tammy Baldwin will be joined by U.S. Senator John Marasso of Wyoming for an afternoon tour of National Technologies in Oak Creek. Hovde and Marasso will then join Louisiana Senator John Kennedy for a health care roundtable at Investors Associated in Madison. Hovde will have media availability after both events. Hovde and Baldwin are scheduled for their only debate on Friday. Attorney General Josh Call says threatening poll workers is illegal. Call says it's essential to protect the right to vote, and the Wisconsin Department of Justice is committed to making sure the state has a safe and secure election. Wisconsin law prohibits anyone from using or threatening force to compel someone to vote, keep them from voting, or to influence their voting decision. State law also prohibits anyone from using duress or fraud to impede or prevent someone from voting. Call says threatening behavior towards election officials is also a crime. If you witness or are subjected to election intimidation or threats, alert an election official and call local law enforcement. Before you send donations to help hurricane relief efforts, consider a monetary gift instead. Better Business Bureau of Wisconsin spokesperson Lisa Schiller says it can be hard to send physical gifts and supplies to groups in hurricane-affected areas. Instead, those monetary gifts can help an organization buy exactly the aid they need in a place they can use it. Also, watch out for anyone soliciting for charity or donations on social media. Scammers are known to copy the identity of reputable groups in order to steal charity donations. Schiller says you can find their list of reputable groups helping the Southeast U.S. recover online at give.org. Dane County Clerk Scott McDonnell, a Democrat, says a new Star Wars parody, PSA, aims to cut through election misinformation by doing something a little more humorous that would get people's attention. Wisconsin County Clerks Association President Trent Miner, a Republican, says election facts should not be a partisan issue. The full 3-minute PSA can be viewed on Blame Society YouTube page. The Richland County Community Services Building and Health and Human Services will be closed today for a staff training. The building will reopen at 8 o'clock Thursday morning for concerns involving crisis situations or to speak with a crisis professional. Call the Mental Health Crisis Line at 888-552-6642. For concerns involving child abuse, neglect, and welfare, call the Richland County Sheriff's Department at 608-647-2106. As the weather turns colder, remember to keep safety in mind when using heating in your home. Keep portable heaters 3 feet away from anything flammable. Always plug a space heater directly into a wall outlet. Do not use an extension cord. Be sure to test your smoke and carbon monoxide alarms and replace batteries if needed. Richland County Clean Sweep will be held Saturday from 8 until noon. Clean Sweep is a limited-time collection of unwanted, unused, or damaged agricultural or household hazardous waste and pharmaceuticals. This program collects, treats, stores, or also disposes of waste in an environmentally safe method through a licensed hazardous waste facility. Hazardous waste can usually be identified by product labels which contain any of the following words: caution, warning, danger, poison, toxic, ignitable or flammable, acid, corrosive, or reactive. Materials that will not be accepted to the clean sweep include prescription medications, explosives such as ammunition and fireworks, human medical and biological wastes, infectious wastes, household sharps, latex paints, radioactive materials, compressed gas cylinders, shock or heat-sensitive materials such as ether, peroxide, or pyrrhic acid, also recyclable motor oil, fertilizer, tires, asbestos, antifreeze, or alkaline batteries as well. Items can be dropped off at the Richland County Clean Sweep Saturday from 8 until noon at the Richland County Highway Shop on Bowen Circle in Richland Center. And at least one headliner has been announced already for next year's Summerfest.
Country Music Association Entertainer of the Year Lainey Wilson will play the American Family Insurance Amphitheater on Thursday, June 26th. Tickets for the show go on sale Friday morning. The 2025 edition of the annual music festival will happen Thursday through Saturday on the last two weekends of June and the first weekend of July along Milwaukee's lakefront. Ted Allen, Wisconsin Radio Network.
We'll look at that forecast for today, which does include a warm-up, and we'll look at that next.
Hello, friends. It's Ellie here from Chet's Feed, Seed, and Such. As autumn finally sets in, stay cozy with Chet's Apparel. We have sweatshirts, crewnecks, and a variety of hats as well. Our merch isn't the only thing to fall for at Chet's. We have premium birdseed and a huge new selection of bird feeders to keep your feathered friends happy. Come explore our large lineup of cat and dog toys, as well as treats. As the wind starts whipping, you can be sure that we have your back with our Henry County wood pellets to keep your home warm. Sold by the bag or even by the pallet. We appreciate our friends down here at Chet's, because without you, there wouldn't be us. Stop by 880 North Orange Street, Richland Center, or give us a call at 647-8833.
A high of 58 today with sunshine, clear and chilly tonight, a low of 31, 65 Thursday and mainly sunny, Friday sunny, breezy and mild, and a high of 70 degrees. In Richland Center yesterday, we were up to 52 degrees, and at night, 27 at midnight, we are down to the current reading, the overnight low. The air is calm right now, and it is 21 frosty degrees.
The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy has exceptional caring staff and great services. They are a locally owned, independent pharmacy, proudly serving the surrounding area communities. The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy is committed to helping patients manage their medications. The pharmacists work along with patients and their healthcare providers to find an individualized plan to help each patient maximize the benefits of their medications while minimizing or preventing adverse effects, interactions, costs, and waste.
Donald Trump's import sales tax plan would cost the average American family almost $4,000 a year more for everyday necessities, like groceries, school supplies, medications, clothes, gas. $3,900 more added to your cart every year.
Donald Trump plans to impose what is, in effect, a national sales tax. It will mean higher prices on just about every one of your daily needs. A Trump tax on gas. A Trump tax on food. Instead of a Trump tax hike, we will pass a middle-class tax cut that will benefit more than 100 million Americans. I will help families by letting you keep more of your hard-earned money.
Learn more at thetrumptax.com. Paid for by voters of these 50 states. Votersofthese50states.com. Voters of these 50 states is responsible for the content of this advertising, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Sports Time is sponsored by the Richland Hospital, specializing in rural health care since 1924, making a difference by caring, educating, and healing. And by the Homesteaders Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. A look back at high school sports coming up, and also details on the Packers switching kickers.
When the quality of your care and comfort matter most, the Kramer Infusion Center at the Richland Hospital and Clinics is here for you. We offer a wide variety of treatments in a comfortable, home-like environment for those battling cancers, Crohn's disease, hemophilia, or other health challenges requiring infusions. Because individual care plans are unique, it's best to call and ask if your care can be delivered close to home with us, the Richland Hospital and Clinics, caring, educating, healing.
I'm Phil Nee with sports. Richland Center Hornet volleyball team swept Lancaster last night in a Southwest Wisconsin match. The scores were 25-10, 25-22, and 25-17. With the win, the Hornets are now 7-2 and tied with Platteville for the conference title with one match to play. Richland Center will host Prairie du Chien on Thursday night, while Platteville will travel to River Valley as well on Thursday. Last night, head coach Jamie Johnson said the Hornets dug deep to get last evening's victory.
Really proud of how we came out. You know, if you think about it, we're missing fourth of our players that normally play of our eight-person rotation. And can't say enough about our bench who came in, rallied around that cause. The girls were focused. We knew they would come back. Talked about Lancaster's proof program. They've been battling a lot of scores in the 20s, so we knew it'd be close. You know, we lost a little bit of our focus, but that happens in volleyball.
Bridgestone Center with the win last night. Also, it was Dodgeville getting a victory against River Valley by a final of 3-1. And Platteville with a win sweeping Prairie du Chien, keeping pace with the Hornets. In other action, Iowa Grant swept Riverdale. It was Cuba City in 3 over Boscobel. Fenimore 3-1 over Southwestern. In the Ridge and Valley, it was a win for the Ithaca volleyball team as they swept Lafarge last evening. The Bulldogs have now guaranteed at least a tie for the conference championship with a home match Thursday against Waseca Steuben remaining. Ithaca has never won a league championship in volleyball, so congratulations to Coach Sanji Hung and the Bulldogs as they prepare for the final match of the season coming up on Thursday. The WIAA playoffs will begin next Tuesday night. Elsewhere, Seneca 3-0 over Kickapoo, and Wazika Steuben got the win 3-1 over Weston. Royal in 4 over Winnewick Center. Arcadia swept Viroqua as well, and West Salem in 4 over Westby. Mineral Point swept Darlington last night, and some other scores. Mauston 3-1 over Wautoma. And the Highland Cardinals have now improved their record to 12-0 in the Six Rivers with a 3-0 win against Cassville. In soccer from last night, it was the same score at halftime, end of the game score as well, as River Valley edged Richland Center 2-1 in high school soccer. That was the final matchup of the regular season, and the two teams will play in the first round of the WIAA playoffs next week. Wisconsin Dells was a 3-0 winner over Sugar River. The Packers have switched kickers once again. The team announced it has signed veteran kicker Brandon McManus to a 1-year contract. Incumbent kicker Braden Narveson was released the same day. ESPN reported the move, with NFL insider Adam Schefter saying McManus is expected to be kicking for Green Bay Sunday against the Texans. The 25-year-old Narveson was dropped after missing his 5th field goal attempt in 6 games this past Sunday. McManus has had some off-the-field issues. As far as that goes, it follows a league ruling that late last month that said it did not find sufficient evidence to support claims that McManus sexually assaulted 2 women who were working as flight attendants on the Jacksonville Jaguars trip to London last year. The civil case remains active in Duval County Circuit Court. Aaron Judge hit a 2-run drive into Monument Park for his first home run of the postseason, and the Yankees beat the Guardians 6-3 to take a 2-0 American League Championship Series lead last night. The Dodgers play at the Mets tonight in the National League playoffs. And that's an update on sports. I'm Phil Nee.
LS tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, I'm Rick from the Homesteader Store. The fastest growing tractor line in Wisconsin is LS Tractor, part of the LG group of companies. These high quality 4-wheel drive diesel tractors are one of the best values in compact tractors. They have silky smooth hydrostatic transmissions. They offer great financing. You can go to our website where you can watch a short video where I go through the different sizes of LS tractors to fit your needs.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we're here to talk a little bit about the spine-chilling adventure at the A.D. German Warehouse coming up with us. We have Ashley Mott, who is a volunteer. She's a board member and secretary of the A.D. German Warehouse. It seems like this was a long ways off when you first talked about it. Here we are in October, and it's right around the corner, Ashley.
I know, it's already here. It's going to come by really fast.
It is. You've been having a few meetings with some of your volunteers and getting them ready to go. How's that been going?
It's been going really good. We have volunteers. We do need more volunteers. So if anybody wants to volunteer, reach out to us. You can reach out to us on Facebook or info@adgermanwarehouse@gmail. We do have build dates too. So if anybody wants to help, you can help build and set up and decorate the haunted house, which is really cool. All of our volunteers that participate in the haunted warehouse actually get a free movie ticket for the Starlight or Center Cinema. That's good until December 31st of this year. So.
And I think they'll be showing some scary movies during that weekend too, won't they?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. You can get scared all kinds of ways that weekend. So, tell me a little bit about this year's haunted warehouse and what's going to make this one unique.
So this one is going to be unique because it's going to be inside. It's going to be the first and second floor of the A.D. German Warehouse, which is awesome. It's 4,000 square feet on each floor, so it's approximately about 8,000 square feet you're working with for a haunted house or haunted warehouse. That's what we're doing. So it's a lot to pack in, but we're hoping that we can give the community a really, really cool attraction and have it be a little bit longer. Which is really neat, too. So you'll check in the 1912, and then you'll move over to the warehouse and venture up through the floors.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So that's a little different and a lot more space than you've had in the past then, isn't it?
Yep, it's a lot more space, which is kind of neat and tricky at the same time. We have a kind of like certain areas where you kind of have to like go through it kind of like a maze. And then we have other areas where you stroll past, you don't really know where you're going. So it's pretty cool. And we've had a group of people that have come in and helped us throughout the last couple of months kind of come up with new ideas and things like this. I've been working on this for a year about. So it's just kind of like been a labor of love. And it's just one of the really, really cool events that I work with throughout the year. So it's one of my favorites.
And you'll have the soft scare. I don't know if that's the right word for it.
Yep. So we have a small scare, small soft scare. So those are going to be for the people that don't necessarily want all the lights off. They want to come through the attraction and come to be able to support us. So if you mostly it's directed towards like the little kids and then their parents. But my aunt and uncle went in there last year because she does not like the dark. So she came in during the small scare too. So, and that's from 5:30 to 6:30. So.
Do you provide Depends in case somebody just really gets scared?
Nope, we don't, unfortunately.
Maybe next year. So it takes a lot of volunteers stationed throughout this. Yep. Are you pretty well set for volunteers, Ashley?
I need about 15 more volunteers if I could have my dream, yeah. I need about 15 more to like fully staff everything that I'd like in there, yeah.
Even though you've had a little training and mm-hmm. those things going, people aren't going to be behind now if they volunteer?
Nope, not at all. So they can reach out to me, and then I'll go over all that information with them and then get them set up so they're good to go. So we do have a mock run through. That's the 24th, which is the Thursday before the event. And then that way they'll be able to know exactly where they're at, and then it'll be another reiteration of the instructions that I gave them too. So if they haven't signed up, they are more than welcome to reach out to us, and we would be happy to have them.
In the past, Ashley, I know you've had different rooms dedicated to different frightening subjects. Is mm-hmm. it going to be kind of that way again?
Kind of similar, kind of not. I don't really like to go with a theme because it kind of pigeonholes you. So this year it's going to be kind of sporadic, and I kind of want it to be more random. So people kind of won't know what they're going to get when they go into, quote unquote, the next room or wherever transition period that they do. Yeah.
Right. For instance, you could have my senior picture in one room, and that would be that'd be really scary.
Yeah.
Will you have music? Is that a part of it too?
Yes. So we are working with Macedon Records. Craig is coming in to help us with that, which he's been amazing. And he's been helping us set that up and kind of work through the different musics that we're going to be having them played on the first floor and the transition up to the second floor. And then the second floor has a couple different musical tracks. So I let that up to his creative genius. So I know he'll do a great job. And then we've had Ben Kelsch come in and do some commercials for us. He's going to help us do some videos for the people waiting to go in. So to kind of help with the logistics of it and the groups going in. So we've kind of a community effort here. We've got some things donated. We have something donated from Pratt's. We have some stuff donated from A Plus Furniture, which has been really nice, and a couple others. So it's been really good to have a lot of the community come together and to be able to help us and support us too.
You couldn't do it if you didn't have some free stuff there, could you?
Absolutely, yes. We did a BP out on a bunch of things that we needed, and the community came through, and they've been dropping stuff off for us, which has been absolutely amazing. I know that we have a lot of boxes, styrofoam boxes, that have been donated to us from the hospital, which has been absolutely great. They just appear, and it just is amazing to see if you just ask how much the community will give back to you.
This is a very important fundraiser. Is this your biggest fundraiser of the year, Ashley?
Yes, it is. So this fundraiser is our biggest through the entire year. Last year we raised $6,000 profit. So in just two nights, which is amazing. So like I said, this is our hugest fundraiser. And so we like to be able to give back to our community and give them an attraction. But it's huge for us in terms of what we raise annually.
Yeah. How close are you to your goals? Do you set goals for each year? Some money that you like to have made each time?
I do. I like to see the amount of people go through. I think that's for me. I want to be able to see the people that come through and enjoy the building and enjoy the traction so it gets bigger and bigger. And that, and again, will come with the profit too, which is amazing because we can do a lot of stuff with that money.
You recently had the debut of, you had a little bit of a club going on there. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we had a soft opening. We kind of been throwing around speakeasy, lounge, sort of like a pub. So we have a little area on the first floor of the warehouse that we've been working with. It's been an amazing to kind of see the transformation. There's been a lot of work put into it. They've spent hours over there working on it, and they want to transition that into a working lounge or speakeasy where you have beer and seltzers and wine sold there to be able to continue to support the like the donations that come in and the I would say like the money that comes in as far as being able to restore the building. So we have a streamline of revenue coming in.
Any other events coming up at the end of the year, or is this kind of the last big event for the 80 German Warehouse?
So I think that we are going to have a craft or artist fair around December for holiday gifts. So that's kind of in the works. I'm not particularly sure what date that's going to be. So those dates are going to be announced on Facebook and other various things. But if they sign up for our Facebook group, they'll be able to get all the events that we have.
Why do you get involved? Why do you volunteer?
I get involved because I grew up here. I've seen the building when it wasn't in use. I was always just very curious about it, and I knew it was special. It's, you know, it's designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. It's huge. It's the only warehouse that he's ever done, and it's in my hometown. And the building wasn't being used when I was little, and now the board that I'm on is using it. They're doing it. They're making progress. They're doing all these things that is going to sustain the building and give back to the community, and that is amazing. Who wouldn't want to be a part of that?
Even if people aren't interested in the 80 German Warehouse or Frank Lloyd Wright, it is really important. We all benefit when you have visitors to the community to visit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have visitors from Italy. We have visitors from California, Canada, Texas, Arkansas, New York. I mean, we have visitors from all over the world that come to visit that particular warehouse. I did a tour probably about 2 months ago, and they were architects from Italy. And they specifically planned this warehouse on their trip throughout the U.S., which is amazing.
Do you feel a little intimidated when you're on a tour with architects? Yeah, you do. I bet.
Yeah, you do. They know way more than you do most of the times, but they want to be able to see it. They want to hear the story about the warehouse, and that's usually where I gear towards my tours, is the story of the warehouse, not necessarily you know, the design, because most of the people that come through know it already. And they want to, I like to give them the personal story of the community and its relationship with the warehouse.
The tour season for the warehouse is now over, isn't it?
It is. So we usually run our tours from May to October. So we want to be able to do it year round. But with it being limited heating in there at this point, we have it from May to October. The nice thing about it is now is that we were able to get the building completely sealed last January, so January of 2024. So we all have new windows in there. We have doors. The roof is sealed. So right now it's just more or less getting the inside done now because we have everything sealed.
Yeah, if money were no object, can you imagine what a place that would be? And your rooftop, maybe you'd have a lounge up on the rooftop.
Yes, that would be amazing. I mean, there's so many things that you could do with the building. And I mean, list can go on and on. And it's all these different things we hear about from the people that come into the tours about, oh, you could do this, you could do this, you could do this. But it really depends on money. So we need those funds to be able to do the things with the building that we would like to do. But it would be amazing to have, you know, like a rooftop lounge or bar overlooking, you know, the amazing nature that we have around. I mean, the hills, everything. It's gorgeous up there.
I've never been there, but I bet you can see pretty well when you get up there, can't you?
You can. You can. And you can definitely see the driftless rolling hills, and the views are just amazing. And we don't have that in the driftless area. We just don't. I mean, we're located in a spot in between Madison and La Crosse, and those are where you're going to find your rooftop bars and things like that, but you're not going to find it in this area, which if we did have it, that would be really unique and would draw more people in to come and see it as well.
Because it is a Frank Lloyd Wright building, does that make it easier when you're writing for grants, or does it make that much difference?
It makes it a little bit harder because we have to have historical credits, and so we have to be able to work within those guidelines as well. And we have to apply for certain grants for certain things, so it kind of makes it a little niche that we have to do. So it makes it a little harder, actually, to write grants for it.
But I'm sure that process continues, right?
Yep. So we're always continuing to think about what we can do and try to see if we can find something somewhere.
Well, let's go over the scare again coming up. What are the dates, Ashley?
So the Haunted Warehouse is going to be October 25th and 26th. It's going to be a Friday and Saturday, so it's just going to be 2 days. The small scare is going to be from 5:30 to 6:30. And again, that's going to be for your parents or kids or anybody that does not want the lights off. And then at 7 o'clock, that's when all the lights are going to go off, and that's what we call No Mercy. So all the actors are going to get ready, and they're going to get to scare you as much as they can from 7 to 9:30. The small scare, kids are $10, and then adults are $15. And then after 7 o'clock, everyone is $15 to go in. And so we have tickets that are sold at the 1912, which is 177 East Hazeltine, and those can be through cash or credit card. So they're at the 1912, and then they'll go through the instructions. They'll wait for their group to get called, which is a max group of 8. So if there's a small group, they'll get merged. If there's a larger group than 8 people, then we have to separate them. It just makes the attraction a lot better for everybody that's involved. So if you have a larger group, then they're not going to get scared as much. And we also like to keep that as far as, you know, tracking people inside the building as well. So we're really excited.
Oh, it's going to be fun. It'd be great if you had a group of 8 friends that went through together, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really fun to see.